communicate, 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 because without communication, it's not going to go and be very effective. So don't be afraid to bump elbows and say, hey, you know, I haven't heard anything. Can you talk to me? You know, is there anything I can fix? You know, was it pricing? Was it quality? Was it what was it that I can change and grow and learn from?
Welcome to the 335th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. When it comes to getting involved with selling food straight off the farm, it can be tough to know where to start, given all the regulatory and logistical hurdles that can be involved. Even knowing how to have that first conversation with a school's cafeteria manager or a restaurant chef can be daunting. That's why someone like Sarah George can be such a rich source of information. When it comes to field to fork, you name it, and Sarah's been involved with it. Not only does she operate a vegetable and fruit farm in western Wisconsin, but Sarah is the market manager for the Red Wing Area Farmers Market in Minnesota. She's also a food safety trainer for the state of Minnesota, and through a position with Renewing the Countryside, provides support for farmers throughout the upper Midwest. But Sarah also has insights on another key aspect of the food business. For 9 years, she worked at the Harborview Cafe, a restaurant in Pepin, Wisconsin, that works to source from local farmers. Needless to say, spend even a few minutes with Sarah, and one will get a cornucopia of information on how to get started in selling products straight off the farm to institutions like schools and restaurants. She doesn't sugarcoat the challenges involved, but also has seen several examples of farm-to-table relationships working, and believes there are lessons to be learned from those successful partnerships. To Sarah, the potential benefits of creating a thriving field-to-fork infrastructure make it well worth overcoming any challenges that might be in the way. After all, as research by food systems analyst Ken Meter has shown, each year $240 million is spent in the Upper Minnesota River Valley region alone to bring food in from other areas. What if even a small portion of that money could be captured and circulated locally? Such a scenario is being played out in rural communities throughout the Midwest. Sarah recently spoke at a food forum the Land Stewardship Project held in Montevideo in western Minnesota. During the forum, farmers had the opportunity to connect with food hubs, food shelves, and other groups and individuals in the area who are looking to source vegetables, fruit, meat, eggs, grains, and other products locally. This is part of LSP's efforts in western Minnesota to develop an infrastructure that provides healthy, local food to eaters while supporting a farm economy that keeps wealth in the community. After the food forum, Sarah sat down to talk with me about some of the barriers that stand in the way of bringing farmers and institutional food buyers together and why those barriers are not insurmountable. She also shared how her firsthand observations have made it clear there are times when farmers need to learn how to bump elbows with chefs and food service managers and make clear communication a critical part of their repertoire. Sarah started our conversation by describing a Renewing the Countryside study that involved her doing extensive interviews with restaurateurs and food managers who work at schools and early child care centers. Her main question for them, what can be done to increase their purchases of food from local farmers?
So we got a project through the Department of Agriculture, and it was actually the Parsnip Pilot. Everybody likes acronyms, right? So you go around as LSP, we walk around as RTC. So Parsnip was the pilot to accelerate regional support for nutrition between institutions and producers. Okay. I love the name because here we go, we're bringing in the food. But actually, I was kind of the plant in the community. So farm to school, when you're working with the school food service director and they have a question about what food they can source, should they go to Department of Agriculture because they rule over the food? Should they go to Department of Health because they're their inspector? Should they go to Department of Education because they're not really sure? Like, so their hands are tied. Not only do they not know where to find the farmers, but they don't know who to turn to find out if it's legal. So I was that trained plant in the community to see if I could help answer those questions and increase those local food sales.
Who did you actually survey? Who all were you talking to?
I went to 36 different institutions, not only schools. I went to child care centers, and I went to child care homes, and I went to restaurants down in southeast Minnesota. I don't know, about a 100-mile region, mm-hmm. From Rochester, Wabasha, Cannon Falls, in that area, and just asked, like, what are your biggest barriers when you're buying local food? When do you place your orders? How do you place your orders? If you were to find a farmer, would you know what you could, how to order from them? And how do you find your farmers? I also asked him, like, if you could get training. What training can we help you with? Would you like farmer buyer speed dating? Would you like nutritional support? Would you like menu writing options? What is it that we can help you with? Do you want us to come up with the nutritional calorie? What is it that you need? And so 36 institutions that we worked with, a majority of them were schools and early care sites. Mm-hmm. That was done in 2018 and 2019.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So before the pandemic.
It was.
Yeah.
Yes, things have changed a bit then, but we're still in communication with almost all of them.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things you talked about was you came up, there was kind of five barriers that the institutions talked about and five barriers that the farmers talked about. Let's talk about the institutions first. I'm really interested in some of those barriers that kind of were, sounds like some common threads that you found.
Yeah, there was definitely more than five that were identified, but the top five that were identified when we're working with farm to school with those institutions, I mean, Brian, imagine you're the food service director. You don't know how to place the orders with the farmers. Like, how do you find farmers that are going to have enough product that they can deliver and they know how to deliver it? They have food safety training. So finding that buyer or finding that farmer mm-hmm. was the number one barrier when it came to farm to school from those institutions. But after that, imagine you're the food service director and you're reaching out to the farmers, but actually, you know, John likes text, Jane likes email, and Joe likes it when you call him. And that's what's happening is like each of them have a different ordering system. There's not an aggregated system where you're like, hey, I can go online on Sysco and place an order and expect I know what time that Sysco truck is going to show up. I know what's going to happen when they get here. Mm-hmm. They know the policies and the processes and the procedure. They know how to get in here. It's not the case with a local farmer. They're going to have to line up that order. There's going to be difference in pricing, difference in delivery, in the time. And your farmers aren't really sure on quantity, if they can meet that quantity. So the top five items was reaching the farmers. It was pricing. There's that question. It's mm-hmm. that elephant in the room. It was that delivery, because every single time a farmer shows up at the back door, you have to stop what you're doing and open the back door. You're going to have to inspect that product and receive that product. You're going to have to put that product in your cooler or wherever it needs to go, first in, first out. And you're going to have to file that invoice so that you can put it in your system and get them paid. You're going to jump back into what you were working on, and the next doorbell is going to ring with the next farmer. Like, how much time do they have to supporting local? Then there's that big, big exclamation point where 26 of the institutions that I worked with didn't even realize that they could buy local food from farmers.
They actually thought it was illegal.
They thought it was illegal. And I don't know if their thought in the back of their mind is like, when you get food from Bix or Sysco, there's this magic sanitizer bar that automatically makes your food safe or something. Because food comes from farms. And the state of Minnesota is very supportive on getting food from the Department of Agriculture. And Department of Education is supporting it, saying, hey, we want you to buy local food. But there's this myth that they're not, that it's not legal. And so we really want to promote that buying local food is legal, and supporting our local farmers is important.
So that was some of the barriers for the buyers. What about the farmers?
Yeah, I love this question. As a farmer myself, I can tell you, you know, we grow a lot of crops in our short Minnesota summers. But getting that time off the farm to develop relationships with buyers takes so long. And we need to be in the field dealing with watering and dealing with planting and succession planting and dealing with the pests. So number one is the time away from the farm developing relationships. Number two is that delivery component. Like, when do they want that delivery? Is it going to mash up and mesh up with our schedules, with our farmers markets and our other deliveries? You know, schools, they want their orders delivered in the beginning of the week, where restaurants want their orders delivered at the end of the week. And how do we meet that match? There's also that fear, you know, schools are serving 1,000 students or they're serving 3,000 students at a time. And that feels overwhelming. I can't provide 3,000 students cherry tomatoes. And so you're like, oh, I can't meet that quantity. In addition to that, however, is the pricing. Again, pricing comes up because there's this myth that you have to lower your price so low that you can't even make your costs for our farmers. They're afraid to give that pricing out. I want to encourage farmers, you know, ask for a price list so you can see if you're in the mark or on the mark for that. And the final component for the farmers, number five, was produce standards. Like, how should we pack it? How should we, do we deliver this in our crates for our field crates? Do we deliver this in boxes and bags? How do the schools want that? And they're afraid to ask because sometimes wholesale is brand new to them.
One of the things that you talked about was it can be very overwhelming. You showed a great video of carrots, how carrots go from a farm in Northfield into a school in Minneapolis, I believe. And it was great. It was very exciting to see that. But it can be a little overwhelming to see that process and go, wow, there's a lot of steps there. But you were saying one of the key tools that or key strategies farmers can use is kind of look at it as it's not all or nothing. And the same with the buyers, that they can maybe do some things where they kind of start to blend that into their thing piecemeal, and the farmers can also say, well, this is what I'm good at producing, and this is kind of focus on what they're good at doing and try instead of trying to provide everything for that institution.
Absolutely. One of the things, as you're thinking about farm to school, people are like, oh, they're ordering all this food from local farms. Start small. Look at your salad bar. Look at getting apples for Apple Crunch Day. It's the second Thursday in October. Try and serve something in the classroom as a taste test. Or have a farmer come in and just do a sample of something that they provide. Don't jump in both feet first because that's going to just scare the bejeebies out of everybody. And you just really want to start small. Get your kitchen staff used to working with the farmer or with local food and get your farmers used to making those consistent deliveries. Kind of feel through what that process looks like and communicate, because without communication, it's not going to go and be very effective. Farmers are in the community doing this because we're passionate about it. There's not a ton of money in it for us as farmers. And so we're not out there trying to hurt anybody in the community. We want to help. We want to engage in the school, bringing our seeds in and donating them to the kindergarten classroom so they can put them in a cup and plant those seeds and watch that magic happen. It's a fascinating process to see a seed grow and see the eyes of a student as they're learning this. And I'm going to tell you, farmers would donate seeds. They're buying it in bulk. They would donate seeds to make that happen. They would come in and help in the classroom. And there's amazing resources in the state of Minnesota, like Harvest of the Month, where they can provide stickers and posters. Minnesota Grown, who has a wholesale directory, and they can provide the posters, they can provide laminate cards, and that wholesale directory, you can see where to find your local farmers or your food hubs. And then there's also Kids in the Classroom, where teachers are able to download, let's say green beans is the resource and you're teaching second grade. You can go to second grade and choose beans, and there, boom, you've got activities, you've got sheets of lesson plans that you can print out. It's already done and made for you. And then there's templates for newsletters you can send home to the parents to say, look, we're doing farm to school. Talk to your students about the beans they tried today. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Well, and speaking of resources, one of the things that the kind of reality of the situation that even if you're a farmer who's not that old, the school kitchens are different than maybe when we were going to school. They just don't have the facilities to process the food and prepare whole foods, that kind of thing. But the good news is, I was just talking to Ryan Pesch recently at the U of M. He's a U of M extensionist who works on direct marketing and has worked on farm to school. As he has made clear, and a lot of other folks have made clear, we have, thanks to a couple of the most recent legislative sessions, we have a lot of resources available now for specifically school kitchens who want to put in certain equipment or storage facilities, that type of thing.
Absolutely. We have, not only do we have AGRI, so that's the Agriculture Research and Innovation Grant that schools can apply for. That'll help them purchase food. If they get that food purchased, then they can also add in an AGRI equipment grant to go with that. There's not only the first bite, so if it's your first time trying local foods, great, you get the first bite, no match requirement. but there's also the full tray option for Agri. In addition to that, we have the SHIP program, so the Statewide Health Improvement Partnership, and they'll help you get equipment into the kitchen to make farm to school possible. They can help with, you know, carts that you can wheel snacks into the kitchen or into the classrooms. They'll help with robo-coos or tilt skillets or combi ovens. And so will the Agri grant. These are the items that will make it easier to source local foods and then process those in your kitchen.
You talked about how critical communication is, which farmers, sometimes that's not their strength, frankly. But also it sounds like you have to acknowledge, the farmer has to acknowledge and the institution has to acknowledge there's different people in every situation can be, communication can be different. Some people prefer to text, some prefer a call, some want to just order online, but there's all these different kinds of communication. I mean, how do you kind of grapple with that? Is that just, you just have to deal with that?
Yeah, that's the challenge for the schools. And we're trying, Renewing the Countryside is working very hard to overcome some of that by working with our food hubs. We have farmers market food hubs that we're putting statewide and training in on local food connections. I'm going to tell you that our food hubs, you can order online from each of our individual farmers with one shopping cart, one invoice, one payment, and one delivery if you utilize a food hub like the Wilmer Food Hub that is here locally. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about that is, like, we're kind of the Amazon of local food. You know, when you order from Amazon, you can order from multiple different organizations or people, and you're going to have one payment. You might get a couple deliveries depending on how much you order, but actually, you're ordering all of this food. You know who you can go to mm-hmm. when you have an issue, because Beverly's going to be right there to support you if there's an issue with the food. You don't have to call four farmers or text a farmer. And it's really been impactful. The dollar amounts that our statewide food hubs have sold in, so 2022, we were at $94,000 sold in local food in 2022 over the course of the year. Mm-hmm. And $94,000, again, Brian, it's a hell of a lot of radishes.
Yeah.
This year, we were at over $212,000, more than double. I'm going to tell you that 9 of our 10 food hubs statewide received that local food purchase assistance grant for over $900,000 to utilize over the next year and a half. So we know that number is going to exponentially grow. There's large demand, and that doesn't include the food for schools. It doesn't include the retail sales that are happening in most of our communities. And so these food hubs, I see being a super huge impact on our Minnesota food economy, and I'm really hopeful that we can help support more of our Minnesota food shed with this hub-to-hub thing that's taking place. But yeah, it's a trick for our schools to start reaching out to individual farmers and, you know, texting them and calling them and emailing them. And it's really hard to call a local farmer and say, look, I have a problem. There's slugs in my lettuce. Mm. Where if that happened with Cisco, they'd be like, come back and pick it up. But, you know, when it's a local farmer and a face you know, that's not as easy.
Yeah.
And so communication is key. It's critical, or that relationship isn't going to be effective.
Well, you made the point that sometimes if there is a problem, the farmer just may never get a call again. They may just go, well, we're going to source it from somebody else. So you may not even know what the problem was.
Absolutely. And then the farmer's at a loss because they're like, oh, I thought I did a good thing. I saw it at the restaurant that I worked at, where I had a farmer that delivered 100 pounds of carrots, but the carrots were like 3 inches long. I don't know if you're aware, but in a lot of our kitchens in restaurants, there's 15 and 16-year-old kids in there trying to peel these carrots. Mm-hmm. And it was a nightmare trying to make that happen. We ended up making like a carrot soup so that we could utilize these carrots. But let me tell you, that farmer never got another order. And had the chef slowed down and said, hey, look, you know what, next time I need those carrots to be bigger, I know darn tootin' that farmer would have made that happen. But that communication is much more challenging, so don't be afraid to bump elbows and say, hey, you know, I haven't heard anything, can you talk to me, you know, is there anything I can fix? You know, was it pricing, was it quality, was it, what was it that I can change and grow and learn from?
Yeah, well, you mentioned this bumping elbows. That was a really good, if you could describe that again, that kind of example of difference between when a farmer comes in, but when, say, Cisco or somebody from a food company representative comes in, that situation, it's pretty daunting a little bit, kind of the relationship, because they have it down, how to work with restaurants especially.
Yeah, as much as I love chatting, I'm going to tell you, I was as quiet as a mouse in that restaurant kitchen so that I could watch and see and learn. How come, what are Bix and Cisco and Indian Head doing differently than our local farmers? How are our farmers making their deliveries? And, you know, some of the farmers would put the food into the cooler and they would hand the invoice to the chef. And some of the farmers would put the food in the kitchen and they would put the invoice in the invoice box. And some of the farmers would leave the invoice on top of the cooler. They didn't realize, like, there was no standard process. And when you have younger kids working in these restaurants, they don't realize that the farmers aren't rotating the product, so they're grabbing the top box of kale, and the bottom box of kale on that big stack is now getting older and older, and it's getting... So, number one, Bix and Cisco set the food outside of the cooler. Bix and Cisco, the delivery guy, will set that food right outside the cooler. It's our job to put it where it needs to go. Bix and Cisco is going to bring the canned goods down to the bottom of the stairs where they know we're going to put them. Bix and Cisco is going to wheel the frozen goods and set it right on top of the freezer because they know we're going to get to it right away. And they're going to drop the invoice right in the invoice slot. They're going to leave. But within 2 hours, and I mean within 2 hours, they have who I refer to as the elbow bumper. I don't know what his name is. I don't know what his role is, whatever.
It's a good name.
Sales rep. But he, in my world, is the elbow bumper. And he walks in and just is ear to ear grinning. He walks in and he bumps elbows with the chef and says, let's go out here. And they go and they sit at the bar and they have a drink. Mm-hmm. You know, they know what time to show up because they know the restaurant's closed. He brings in samples every single time. Have you seen this new product? You've got to try it. And he looks over the delivery for the day and says, I see that we missed delivering a case of peas. Do you need those today or can I add them to tomorrow's truck?
Yeah.
You know, what can I do? And they sit at that bar and they're chatting for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes every single time there's a delivery. We farmers don't have that elbow bumper. We don't have somebody that can walk into the back door and kind of BS with that chef and find out, like, hey, did that delivery go okay? Does everything get put away okay? You're missing anything? Oh my gosh, you got heirloom tomatoes and you ordered round reds, or you got round reds and you were hoping for heirlooms, whatever.
Yeah.
We don't have that. Yeah. As a matter of fact, there's no communication. Where's my check is all we have. And that's all you're going to get. And it's important to know that difference because how can we change that?
Well, you learned a hard lesson. Speaking of heirloom tomatoes, and I think it's a good example, though, too, of you apparently had a good relationship with that restaurant, or they wouldn't have called you back.
I did. So I had delivered some heirloom tomatoes. Ben had placed an order for six flats of heirloom tomatoes from me, and he wanted as colorful as he could get. And I thought, oh, I'm so proud of these tomatoes. So I put all six flats together, colorful varieties. And I walked in just grinning ear to ear with these tomatoes. And I said, hey, Ben, oh my gosh, look at these beauties. I said, just put them up in the window. They're just going to need to ripen for about 24, maybe 48 hours, and they'll be ready to go. And Ben's jaw dropped. He was like Sarah, and he looked at his watch, and he's like, I need these for today's lunch service, and that's in an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh. Yeah, that was a really hard lesson to learn. And I didn't know what I should do at that point, but I had already sold at the farmer's market the day prior. So I didn't have anything more ripe than that. Thankfully, Ben, we have a chalkboard menu and he rotated it to the next day, but they don't have a window to put tomatoes in. Duh.
Right.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Odds are they're putting it in a walk-in cooler. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, they're not going to ripen in a walk-in cooler. So they had to figure out what to do with those six flats.
Mm.
You know, and it was like, ugh.
Yeah. Hard lesson.
Mm-hmm. But that's how we learn. And that's ways that we can communicate and make it happen.
Yeah. And it is a good example of you had a good relationship with them so that you were able to get a second chance on that a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why that relationship development can be complicated too, because it wasn't my first time meeting Ben. I had worked in the institution already. Ben had already been on my field.
Yeah.
I knew the owner. It was like, oh, thank God. I knew and had developed a relationship in our small community, or I would have never gotten a call back.
What would be one or two first steps that a farmer should take if they're interested in approaching somebody, and one or two first steps that a buyer should take if they are interested in reaching out to a farmer? We have some farmers here who I know are just barely sticking their toes into the water of local and direct marketing. So that's the kind of things they're like, okay, how do I even take that first initial step? And I know there's some buyers there in that same situation too.
That's a great question, Brian, and I love that question because when I was interviewing the institutions, one of the things that I found is that they're so busy, they don't want to take the time to meet with you. And when you call and say, can I have some time to sit down? They're just like, we're good. Thank you. I'm pass, hard pass. Mm-hmm. And it was constant. And then I made a list, and we looked at that list today. And the list was, if you could buy anything locally, and I listed all of the items that you could source locally here in Minnesota, from apples to zucchini. And then I went and added meat and maple syrup and honey and eggs and all the different proteins. And you know what? That list takes about 4 minutes to fill out.
Mm-hmm.
Step one on your relationship. Mm-hmm. If you could source anything locally, what would it be? And have that ready. We have that on our Farmers Market Hub website, free for you to download. It's easily accessible. I can help. Email me at sarah@rtcinfo.org, and I'll send it to you if you want that list. Because having that, that's a first step that's going to get you eyesight with the chef. Thank them for their time with the kitchen. Thank them for their time and walk away. Now you take a minute and you look at that list. And you go back and you say, you know what? I have these four items that I can give to you. How many? And then you go in with that buyer survey.
Mm-hmm.
And the buyer survey, you don't hand it to them. This is something that you're going to walk through with them. We have that list as well. Because this is, I'm thinking about your time being important. Can you tell me what days of the week you place orders? Can you tell me how many students you have? Can you tell me how frequently you like deliveries? Are you on a food service program? Because if they're on a food service program, they're limited to who they can buy from. So
right.
Maybe you're talking to the wrong person. Who places the orders? Do you prefer phone or text or email? Now we're asking you, what's important to you? It's not my agenda now. It's your agenda. And that starts that relationship. Leave. At that point, leave. Give them their free space. They're going to see that you're respecting their time,
mm-hmm.
that you're respecting their wishes, and you're listening to their needs. Then download their menu from online to see if there's anything that you could do to swap anything out,
yeah.
substitute anything, and start there.
So on the other side, what would be, if you're a buyer, what would be a first step trying to track down a farmer who, is that... I mean, that sounds like almost even tougher in some ways.
Yeah, it can be. So the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Education, Minnesota Grown, Renewing the Countryside, all have resources on where you can start finding local farms that are doing wholesale. But you know what? You can go to your local farmer's market. Your market manager is going to know which farmers have the ability to scale up. They know which farmers they would buy from that are experienced in quantities, larger quantities, and in produce standards, so
mm-hmm.
delivering in bulk. They know which farmers have the different training. So go to the local farmer's market. Begin there. But also don't be afraid to go to Minnesota Grown, Department of Agriculture, Department of Education, or any of the food hubs statewide who pull together product and aggregate it. Aggregating means they're combining produce from multiple farms
mm-hmm.
for those deliveries and those connections.
Yeah, and it's not just produce. Meat and even dairy products and eggs, that kind of thing is available now through some of these aggregation services.
That's correct. Maple syrup, honey, wild rice. It's awesome to see what we can move. We had quite a few buffalo. And I thought, interesting. And the schools were asking for the buffalo. And I thought, gosh, I wonder how many farmers would like to jump into buffalo.
Yeah.
Interesting. But, you know, we just did 6 road shows, farm to kids road shows statewide. We just completed that and did that produce supply and demand survey.
Right.
We have an idea of what the top 10 items are that are interested, that the schools are interested in, but we also have an idea of like what the supply and demand is statewide. We created an aggregated list, and it's fascinating to see. And we're trying to decide, is there a way we can provide that resource to farmers?
Listening to you talk and then some of the other presentations we had here, and then just listening to folks, farmers and buyers talk, it really struck me of this is, we're right at the, you don't want to get, you know, get too pie in the sky about this, but the potential is so tremendous. It's all potential in a way, because we really haven't even tapped into it. And the economic value that this could add to local communities, to some of these local communities, it seems like it's really the sky's the limit in some ways. I mean, it must be kind of exciting to see how much potential there is out there.
I love it. The farm to school is good for our communities. It's good for our kids. It's good for our farmers. It's good for our schools. It is a win-win-win. And you don't get that with every project that you put your passion into, that you put your time and energy into. For me, it's passion. And I do this because I'm so passionate about supporting our farmers and increasing the healthy, nutrient-dense local foods into each of our schools so that our kids learn. If they're going to try it at a younger age, they're going to start liking these items, and they're going to start building demand. And right now, the kids are used to, so many families are used to not cooking at home, but if they start tasting it in the schools, they're going to start talking to their families, like the Power of Produce program at farmers markets. You know, they start picking out their fruits and vegetables. They're going to tell their parents, hey, let's go to the farmer's market. I want to go get my $2 token. They get the same thing at the school where they say, I tried these carrots from this farmer, or I tried this, I don't know, buffalo from this farmer. Mom, you got to try it. It was so good. Now we're increasing the health of our communities, one student at a time, and it's powerful.
For resources on farm-to-table marketing and LSP's work related to community-based foods, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 335 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, a Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.